Okay, welcome to another exciting episode of Time Out with Coach Craig Norman. We're in exam time right now, so we had no competitions last week. On this week's episode, we got Coach Eddie Pomacalla in, a former Gators coach for 24 years from 1984 to 2008. We're gonna talk about his first 12 years at the helm of the Bishop's Gators, rebuilding that program and turning the corner and getting them to a couple of championships. We have our strength and conditioning coach with us here today, Mr. Michael Fulham. All right, I believe as a coach, physical preparation is the foundation for success, and he's done a terrific job with us, so we're going to touch on strength and conditioning for basketball in particular. I'm sitting here with my lovely co-host, Diane Anderville. Coach Anderville, how are things going?
Good, and you?
Good. Today we got back out on the court with the girls. Last week we basically lifted weights four times. Today we lifted hard, and then we practiced for the first time. I was on a conference call. Diane was out there with them. Diane, how did they look out there?
A bit sluggish, a bit tired from the lift we did this morning, but I think we're getting back to the grind.
Good. Like, we're just trying to keep the girls sharp. You know, we have five practices this week, and the girls have to be at three of them because they're still concentrating on exams, and we're in the weight room four times. And then we're going to let them go home December 17th, and they will return December 26th because we got a tournament after Christmas. What we're going to do in this intro segment is we're going to go around the conferences in U Sports. And we're going to just go through the top four teams in each conference, and then we're going to go through the top 10. And then I'm going to briefly review our first half of the season thus far. So, Diane, maybe you can go through the conferences from, I don't know, we're going to go from Canada West out to East.
Sure. So in Canada West, the top four teams are Regina at number one with 9 wins and 1 loss. Saskatchewan is also tied for first place with 9-1. Lethbridge is second with 10 wins and 2 losses, and Trinity Western in third place with 8 wins and 2 losses.
Okay.
Moving on to the AUS, Acadia is in first place, UNB second place, Memorial third, and St. Mary's at fourth. Then in the OUA East, Carlton is in first place with 10 wins, Queens in second place, Ryerson third, and Ottawa fourth. Moving on to the OUA West, Windsor is in first place, Lakehead second, Wilfrid Laurier in third place, and McMaster fourth.
Perfect.
Moving on to RSEQ, McGill, Concordia, and Laval tied at first place, Bishops in second, and UCAM at third place.
Perfect. So, you know, we've played against four top five teams this year, and we played against five top eight teams. So we've had a pretty competitive schedule. Diane, maybe you can go through the top 10 in the country for the last week.
Yeah. So as of December 5th, Acadia is first in the country, McGill is second, Regina third, Carlton fourth, Laval fifth, Saskatchewan sixth, Windsor seven, Concordia eight, Queen nine, and Ryerson at 10.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, you know, we played McGill once, we played Carleton once, we played Laval twice, we played Concordia once, all teams in the top 10. So it was a pretty eventful first semester for us. I'm gonna give a quick review of our year thus far. Right now we're 2-3 in our conference play. All right, we're sitting in a playoff position. Versus U Sports teams overall, we're 7-6, which is, last year we won 7 games all year. Last year we won 2 conference games all year. We've already equaled that output in the first semester, so we're pretty pleased with that performance. We were 0-3 versus NCAA opponents in August, but we were missing a number of our players. So I'm pretty thrilled with our first half performance. You know, out of conference, we were 5-3, I believe, but we played 5 of those games without Mara Marchesotti. All right, we played Carleton in their gym without Mara, and we lost by 6 or 7 to the team. They're 10-0 in their conference. All right, so I thought we've had a pretty good first semester. I think that Edith Noblechilla and Mara are having terrific years. I think Mode and Ashley Malum are doing really well. I think Micheline Gabelis is giving us a tremendous lift off the bench. And Marie Bedouette has had a terrific first year for a first year player from Doss, and she's been she's given us great minutes, and she's probably our top defender, and she's been asked to carry a big load for us. I'm looking forward to a great second half. You know, our goal, I think, this year is to obviously surpass our win totals from last year, and we'd like to see what we can do in the playoffs. I think if we get into that playoff run, I don't think teams are going to be happy to play against us. I still don't think that we're firing on all cylinders. I think that we're still learning how to compete at a high level in a very tough conference. And I know we haven't played our best basketball yet, all right? And come second semester, if we could put it, like, you know, we're trying to peak come late January, February, all right? And I think we got to stay sharp over the break. And I think that our Christmas tournament, which we'll preview in the wrap-up segment of today's show, will get us ready for the second half of play. Anyways, that concludes our introduction. We'll be right back with Coach Mike Fulham. Such is the way of the world, you can never know just where to put all your faith and how will it grow. Gonna rise up, burning black holes and dark memories. Gonna rise up. Okay, welcome back to Time Out with Coach Craig Norman. Today we're joined by our strength and conditioning coach, Mr. Michael Fulham. Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Coach.
I met Michael about 2.5 years ago. All right, I came to Bishop's, and I'm a firm believer in the physical prep component of coaching theory. And for all you listeners out there or coaches, I build my programs on physical prep at the bottom, which is the foundation. All right, then technical skill development, then tactical skill development, then mental training. I believe it's a pyramid. But if you skip the physical prep part, all right, you're going to pay a price with injuries. You're going to pay a price with fatigue. You're just not going to get to where you want to go. I think you can't take any shortcuts with that. Michael Fulham has done an absolutely fantastic job with our program. Last year, in my first year at the helm, we implemented a periodization program, and Michael delivered a new mesocycle every 3 weeks, and we were religious about following it, and we had one injury the whole year, and it was an inner ear infection. We missed no games due to injuries, for soft tissue injuries or fractures or any muscle problems, which is unbelievable at this level. This year, Marimar Chizotti has missed 5 games with a broken thumb, which, you know, was just a fluke accident with the ball. So Michael has done a tremendous job, you know, allowing our girls to handle the training loads that I put on them. And in our conference, it's a very physical style of play where they have to be fit and they have to be able to bang physically for 40 minutes. Now, Mike, I'm wondering, how did you end up becoming a strength and conditioning coach?
That started when I was a football player in high school. So I'm from Verdun in Montreal, and I start to train a little bit, because when you want to be a better player, you need to train. Like you said, when I start to train, I start to be better on the field too. And the reason for this is because I felt better. I was less fatigued. I was better concentration on the field. So everything was better because I started
training. How about your confidence? Did it help your confidence?
That's helped me too on this aspect. The reason for this is because when you start to build muscle, when you start to be better on the field, when you start to have a better motivation to do it, everything, then you do it, that's touch
it's like
everything.
It's like a snowball effect. Once you start getting fit, you play with more confidence. You're able to train for longer. You're able to train more efficiently. You're able to recover quicker, correct?
Exactly. It's all the aspect when you start to train have a positive aspect on your health, and everything touches that.
Now tell me, Mike, how would, if there's any people out there who are interested in becoming a strength and conditioning coach, what should they do to make that dream come true?
You know, in 2017, a lot of people think they're a personal coach. because it's easy to do it and find something on the web. You know, you go on Google, tap bodybuilding, you tap strength conditioning, you will find program, you take it and you can sell it. But the problem with this is because you don't have the knowledge in the back, the why, you know, the knowledge of the why you do it something. So when we build a program and something like this is because we have knowledge in the back. And that is from not just certification, but it's from knowledge we learn in the university. Like me, I did my bachelor in kinesiology in Sherbrooke University, and that have a big, big impact on not just the knowledge I know about the why I do it something, but the vision of what is the anatomy, how the body work, what's the biomechanic in the back of everything that we do it. You know, like the knowledge, it's easy to do it, a squat or a bench, but it's harder to explain how to do it and when you need to do it for a great preparation.
Yeah, like I think the big part of our program, why it's been successful, is obviously you've done a great job of designing the program around the athlete's needs, but I think a big component of it too has been your supervision of the athletes and the consistency of the supervision with them.
Yeah, and that is coming too, I think, and thanks for this, but I think it's coming to it, just listen to the athletes, you know? And just when I say listen, is not to listen what they say. Listen how the body movement go. You know, when you see, like you do it on the court, when you see that the girls are tired or something like this, you need to adjust yourself. You need to adjust the program. You need to adjust everything for the athletes. Build a program is a part, but I think it's adjust is the biggest part.
Now, can you talk, like Mike, I know you have a company that you work very hard at, Function Optimum, and you provide a great service to Bishop's University. I'm wondering if you could talk about your company a bit and describe what you do in your profession.
Function Optimum is a company who started 11 years ago with Nicolas Roy, who was my partner for a long time, and he just sold me his share in the last 3 months, but now Function Optimum have like provide some service to help general population and athletes too. So the service that we have, it is private session, we can do a group session, we do it periodization for people, general people who have simple goal like run with a better time at 21K, or we have athletes like the basketball team, then you're the coach, we just do it periodization for them, and we do it supervision, we do it everything about strength conditioning. So what's the cardio aspect, what's the strength aspect, so the conditioning aspect and the strength are two aspects that we work on it, and we do it periodization, we do it supervision. So what you think then you need it, we can offer to you, because we have manual therapy too, and we have nutrition service with expert work with us. Because I think then you're better to be an expert on what you do it. Like example for me is the strength and conditioning, and I have a team who do it the manual therapy and the nutrition to help me to be better like a team than just a person who do it everything and is good in everything, not an expert in something.
So I mean, we're talking about a lifestyle change here.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I touched briefly on my philosophy on physical prep. I'm wondering if you could, in your words, you could talk about the importance of physical preparation for an elite athlete and specifically a basketball player.
I think then it's pretty important to increase the strength conditioning aspect when you're an athlete. And you can have 15 years old and play in high school or be an elite athlete who play at university team. The difference is what you work on it, because it's a build. You know, like when you're talking about at the beginning, it's a pyramid. But the pyramid starts when you're young. Yeah. When you're coming to see me, when an athlete comes to see me, the first question I will ask to him is, when you start to do a strength conditioning? Some people coming at the university and never touch a weight, never do a strength conditioning before.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
When should a young basketball player start doing physical prep, and what can they do? Because I'm not sure people out there understand what strength and conditioning is. It's not just lifting, right? There's speed, agility, quickness. There's all kinds of components.
When you're younger and you start at the strength conditioning aspect, it's not to lift weight. It's about motor skills, how you move. Because basketball is this: how you can move on the court. So when athletes come to see me, can you move your feet? Can you do it agility? Do you have coordination? You know, like,
so can you got to look at strengths and weaknesses of a particular athlete too, exactly. And see what they got to get better at.
Is yeah, that correct? And yes, exactly. And that is coming for the elite athlete too. When an elite athlete is coming and say, "Yeah, I want to have better performance." First of all, what's your experience? What is your past? Because the injury that you had will have an impact on what you will do it. Because we want to prevent injury before we push your limits for performance.
So you almost have to have a prescription for an athlete to build a program.
Yeah.
Now, can you talk a bit about, with respect to our program, periodization? I don't know if people out there understand what a periodization plan is. It's a 52-week training plan, and some of the different components that go into competing at this level and staying fit for an entire year.
Yeah, and periodization, it's more complicated than what people think. It's, yes, 52 weeks in the periodization, but it depends on the sport. If we take example basketball, the season is long. We have sometimes 2 games per week, sometimes 1. We need to take all the volume of everything. How many practice of basketball you have, how many lifts you want to do it per week, what is the exam period, because we're in university, so they need to study too. So we need to take all of that, put in the periodization, is the reason why we need to talk with the coach. And yes, lift is at the part pretty important to do a strength conditioning, but if we take example, the half season is the way that we will work more on the strength conditioning. During season, we maintain and build a little bit, depends the phase than we are. Like example, Christmas right now, we're in break of game. So what we do it, it's we do it more lift because you are open to this. But other team maybe will say, no, we do it more basketball, yeah, less lift. So it depends the team, it depends with who you work. And the other thing that we say all the time about periodization, it's a pencil in the hand and an erase in the other one. Because one, I will write something at the beginning of the season, maybe at the middle I will need to change all my periodization because some girls can be tired, we can have some injury, we can have different goals that we need to change. So we need to adjust ourselves to the team.
Yeah, I think it's important for coaches out there, if you're working with the strength and conditioning coach, that you have to have open lines of communication. Me and Mike do a pretty good job of communicating, and I see him on almost a daily basis where I could say to Mike, look, I think the athletes are a bit tired. Maybe we should move, you know, instead of doing 3 sets today, we'll go down to 2 sets. And there's that constant communication where that plan is not written in stone, correct?
Yep.
Now, I'm wondering if you could talk, you know, I know people out there, like, it's not just about the lifting or the conditioning or the speed, agility, quickness stuff. There's got to be, can you talk briefly about nutrition and maybe about recovery for an athlete?
Yeah, I will try to do it that short because its subject can go in all the way that we want. First of all, nutrition is something is pretty important. People sometimes forgot because we're just talking about performance, but the nutrition will have an impact on your recovery, on your strength and conditioning, on your motivation, on your study, on everything. So nutrition is one of the base of everything for an athlete, yeah, or for a general population too.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the recovery. We're talking about recovery because people thinking that recovery is just to take rest day. No, it's about what time you go to the bed, what time you wake up, how many hours you sleep, how you sleep, and why I say that is because, oh, I hate 8 hours. Yes, you sleep 8 hours on the couch, in your bed,
yeah,
and how many time you can do a power nap. Can you do it? What's your reality? Do you need 6 hours and the other one need 8? So what is good for you is not maybe good for the other one, but recovery is one of the biggest aspect for any athlete. Sometimes athletes forgot, and what they do is to push themselves at the limit and at the point that gives you overtraining. And at this point, now is more than just recovery. It's a long recovery. You need to take a big rest.
Now, maybe you can touch on the difference between like functional strength versus like bodybuilding. I think a lot of athletes want to go into the gym and they just want to get big, you know, versus becoming a more functional athlete in their sport.
Exactly, because that start with what? That start with the web again. What we can find on the web is more bodybuilding stuff. Because bodybuilding stuff, for me, bodybuilding is a discipline. It's a sport, you know? It's a physical sport. When you go on the stage for bodybuilding, you want to look great. But when you play basketball, it's not to looking great, it's to move great. So if you want need to move great, and if you need to be a great athlete on the court, you need and can be able to finish the fourth quarter, you need to have cardio, you need to have condition, you need to work on strength and conditioning, but more functional stuff. And what is functional? You can do with bench press when we're talking functional. It's the tempo that you will use it, and you don't need to do it, example, just a chest day. Because a chest day give you a big chest, don't give you a better performance on the field or on the court. So you need to work on thing will help you to be a better athlete and not to be just looking great. Because we're calling that a beach training.
Yes. Training so when you go down to the beach, you can show everybody your biceps.
Exactly.
Well, look, Mike, on behalf of the women's basketball program, we're very grateful for the work you do for us. And it's very professional. It's very detailed. And the results speak for themselves. So we thank you very much for coming in today. And, you know, if anybody has any questions for Mike Fulham, you might want to go to the website of Function Optimum. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. FunctionOptimum.com.
.com.
There you go. FunctionOptimum.com.
So, Mike, I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll see you in the next couple of days.
Thank you, Coach.
Welcome back to Time Out with Coach Craig Norman. We have Coach Pomacala back with us, the second installment of a three-part series on his unbelievable coaching career that spanned many, many decades. And right now we're going to, like the first segment, the first time we had Eddie on, we talked about the early years of his development, and we're talking about his playing career and up until the point where he came down to Bishop's and he got his first head coaching job, I think permanent head coaching job at a CIS institution. Eddie, can you talk briefly about how you ended up at Bishop's?
Well, my last year, thanks for having me on, Craig. It's kind of humbling to be asked to come here and to do a three-parter with you, but I'm happy to do it. So my last year at McGill, I started off as an assistant coach for the first part of the year. And I remember on October the 3rd, 1983, I wrote Bruce Coulter a letter. I still have that letter. And the letter stated that my goal was to bring a Canadian college program to national prominence. And if a position at Bishop's ever opened up, I'd be honored to be considered for it. And he wrote me back within a week. And he actually said, you know what, we're going to have some changes. We've got some movement happening and we're going to be looking for a men's and women's coach the following year. And I strongly encourage you to apply.
Well, what was the attraction to BU? Why did you write Bruce Coulter?
Well, all of us who were at Dawson College and were part of Richie Spears' regime worked at the basketball camps at Bishop's.
So you knew it was kind of a special environment.
Yeah, so like that, we never saw any place like it. And like for us, it had the best gymnasium, it had the best cafeteria food, and the residences were top-notch.
Yeah. So, but we're talking about a city boy, and you're looking to go rural. Can you talk a bit about some, like when you arrived here, some of the advantages and disadvantages? Like what struck you as odd? What struck you as a strength? Like it must have been a hard transition moving from the city to Lenoxville.
Well, then at one point I didn't want to come here because I was afraid. I was afraid of the size of the place. And I said, you know, it'll be too small. It'll be boring. There'll be nothing to do. And my team at McGill had just won a championship. Bishop's wasn't doing well. And I said, you know what? I don't know anybody there. It's too small. You know, maybe it's not such a great decision. The difference was Bruce Coulter. Bruce was the guy that offered me a lot of encouragement and And it made me stop and think, you know, it made me stop and say, maybe you should try to go somewhere where somebody wants you as opposed to where they're indifferent to you.
Wow. Now, can you talk about some of the challenges that you inherited? Where was the program at?
The program was in real flux because, you know, Gart Smith had a long coaching career and a distinguished one. He graduated many great kids and people who went on to become really something special in life. And then there was 1 year between him and between when I came where the program, you know, was trying to find itself, but there was really not great direction. And it wasn't that important, you know, it wasn't in terms of, it didn't have a profile. It didn't have that national prominence that I was looking for.
So, but that didn't scare you away. You wanted to build something.
That's what I thought. I mean, I was 26 years old. What did I know? You know, what did I know? I said, geez, you know, I'll come here from McGill and I'll get all kinds of kids into school and we'll have a great team. And you know what? It just didn't work that way.
Now, when you inherited the program and you evaluated what you had, did you set some goals like short-term, medium, long-term goals?
Well, I mean, we kind of started from scratch. You know, we started from everything. You know, we looked at the uniforms. We looked at having a T-shirt. We looked at just little things. And the biggest thing was to try to set a culture. It wasn't in terms of numbers. It was to try to define a culture, to put in and to show people that this is important and we're trying to achieve excellence. And to achieve excellence is not easy. And it requires exceptional work. And it requires a total commitment.
Yeah. Now, can you talk a bit about some of your first major recruits and how you attracted them to Bishop's University?
Well, okay. Well, I never thought I would get to that point because my first 2 years, we won 7 games and we lost 43, and that's a 14% success rate, and that's not good anywhere. And really, I should have been fired. You know, because that's not good. And instead, I was kind of brought in again by Bruce Coulter, who helped me and encouraged me and told me what kind of students I should be looking for. And he kind of explained to me.
Well, let's just rewind. When you got hired at Bishop's, were you given a 2-year contract, a 3-year contract? What was the agreement?
It's a matter of fact, it was one of the greatest agreements I ever heard. Bruce Coulter told me basically, I had a job for life, but I had to promise Bishop's 4 years. And it was more of a gentleman's agreement as opposed to something we signed. And it was just the way things were done back then. And that fit me. You know, I was very comfortable with that.
So you go 7-43. And Eddie, I've been there and I know that. And I've built programs. That must have been hard on you. Like I know the type of personality you are. Yeah. And that must have been bringing that home at night.
Well, yeah, lucky I was a bachelor, or maybe unlucky, but I lost all my confidence. I thought I couldn't do this. I thought I couldn't coach. And I would go back to my apartment, look at the ceilings, and say, why did I do this? You know, maybe I made a bad decision. And basically, you got to hang in there, and you got to be around good people. That's the big thing. The thing was, I had good people around me, which was the athletic department at Bishop's and the community, okay? That just speaks so much for Lenoxville, for the place, and for Bishop's University.
I mean, they must have, I would imagine people around the program saw that things were changing, though. And I would imagine there was still light at the end of the tunnel in those first 2 years.
Actually, there wasn't in the first 2 years. I didn't know how you know, but you couldn't get worse. You couldn't get worse to where we were. And then I was coaching the Quebec team at the time, and I had coached David King and Pierre Tiblin, who were the two best players on the Quebec team. They were in CJEP. I had developed a good relationship with them. They trusted me, and when it came time, they actually took a chance, and one said to me, if you get the other guy, I'll come. So I had to convince one. I said, listen, Pierre said he'd come if you come, and David, you know, vice versa. And so we got those guys. But beyond that, we got a whole bunch of other Bishop's guys. You know, Jeff Harris and Warren Newberry, Scott Wilson, Mark McCauley, You know, these were bishops guys that were maybe under the radar.
Those were a little serious bit. Glue guys.
Yeah, they were great glue guys, and they were
connected the dots for Kinger and Tiblin.
Yeah, and I had two great stars to work with, and it took. The third year was when I started seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. We still didn't make the playoffs, but
King and Tiblin did they arrive in your third year at the helm?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if people out there, you know, I'm sure local people saw David King playing Pierre Tiblin, but they were outstanding basketball players.
Yeah, well, David was, you know, one of the greatest all around players to ever play at Bishops, and Pierre is the all time leading scorer, and I don't think anybody will ever touch his scoring record.
Yeah. I played with Kinger 1 year on the Quebec team. I played against them 1 year when I was in my fifth year at Concordia. And what I admire, well, Kinger was just, he could beat you in many ways, all right? He was quick, he could shoot the ball. But Tiblin was a classic because I never saw a guy run the floor like him. He ran the floor every single time, and when you didn't do your job, he scored.
Yeah, he was great in the lanes. He took it to the basket hard, and he got fouled, and he was a great free throw shooter.
So now you get these first major recruits, and you build around them. So in your third year, you start turning the corner.
Yeah, we won two preseason tournaments that kind of showed us that, yeah, we could win. And we lost the last game of the year. We got beat on a buzzer shot from the three-point line, and nobody shot threes then. It was the first year of the three. Nobody shot threes, and a 6'7 guy who played the post for McGill hit a three at the buzzer.
Who was that?
Clint Hamilton.
Oh, Clint Hamilton.
And that eliminated us from the playoffs, and it left such a bitter taste in our mouths. But we knew that we were there, like that. It was that close.
You were going to turn a mistake into gold after that.
Well, you try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your third year. So now going into your fourth year, what happens in that year?
So I'll tell you something really funny. Okay, there's a legend at Bishops. His name is Gord Smith. He works in the equipment room, I don't know if he's still there, but
yeah, he's still there.
He's been there for ages. So one of the ways you measure success is how many bleachers do you pull out for people to come watch the games? And when I first started, we never, ever, ever pulled out all the bleachers because it was a given that, no, you're not going to fill the place. People are not going to come. So just put out a couple of it. Well, the fourth year, all the bleachers were not just pulled out, but people were attending the games. And we won a very, very exciting championship game against Concordia.
What year was that?
The fourth year, 87-88. We went 9-3 in the league, and we won the championship game 66-63. And we went to the national championships. We were ranked sixth in the country. And we won a few tournaments that year. We traveled to Calgary and did very well at a tournament there. We won the McGill Invitational. There was some nice things happened to us.
So I guess the community was starting to rally around the program. Alumni, there must have been some alumni support. So you ride the wave of David King and Pierre Tiblin for what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, for Pierre 5 years, for David 4, and then I learned a real valuable lesson that once you reach, you know, the top or what you think is the top, it's so much harder to stay there than to actually do it. It's much, much harder to be consistent. And then we kind of fell off the track a little bit.
Once you graduated players?
Yeah, you graduate players. You lose, when you lose Tiblin and King, you're going to lose a heck of a lot. And then the other thing was, but what we were more than just Tiblin and King. We were, you know, we were a really solid team of chemistry guys. And I tried to recruit in that image and try to bring players. And I maybe overrated my coaching ability a little bit at that point because, you're not always going to get a Tiblin and a King. So you figure, I'll get five people and I'll coach them up and they'll be able to do it. Well, no, you know what? In coaching, Craig, and you know this, you got to get lucky.
Yeah.
You got to get lucky. You got to be lucky enough for Eddie, some blue chipper to say yes.
Players win games.
Yep, they sure
all right?
do.
You
they
know,
sure
and, do. And the coaching will go so far, right? But you need players to make plays at
Absolutely.
The end of the game.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
So you graduate these guys. I guess you have to start rebuilding again. But so you figure stuff out, and You get another huge recruiting class that comes in around, what, 92, 93?
That was more, just a little bit after that. Like, 92, 93 were tough years. Actually, 93 was a great year. I got married in St. Mark's Chapel, you know? the team didn't do that great. And I had to pick it up. I had to pick it up myself.
Well, tell me this. So the program falters a bit. How hard was that on you again, man? Because again, I know the type of person you are. Were you flipping out a bit?
Well, yeah. You know, you want to win. You've got pride. And the other thing is you want to do it for the community.
Yes.
Because the community supports you. And you want to give them something that they're going to be proud of.
And let's be honest. You're coaching in a fishbowl in Knoxville, right?
Like, well, you know what?
You leave it all out on the line. Right?
Yeah, it's a nice fishbowl. Yeah. You know, because you step out and you go to the pharmacy. And you go to the bank and you go to, you know, the store and you the people that are there are the people that go to the game. So you're always talking to them about it and you want to do well. So, yeah, I had to pick things up and I'm glad that I did.
Yeah. Now, how many times, you know, in those formative years, how many times were you up and down that highway recruiting?
Well, yeah, I can't count the number of times that helped. Now, one thing that really helped was in 89, and it was because of the success we had my fourth year, I received a phone call from Ken Shields, who was the head coach of the Canadian national team. And it was, I think it was around April, and the phone rang, and I was at home, and I picked it up, and he says, hi, Eddie, this is Ken Shields. What are you doing this summer? Are you free? And I said, hold on a second. And I put the phone down. I did a cartwheel and I came back to the phone and said, yes, I'm free. He says, would you like to join our staff? So I was one of Ken Shields' first four assistants with the Canadian team. And I thought that was going to help me get players. What it actually did, it really helped my knowledge. It didn't really help get me players. But it really helped my development as a coach.
Well, obviously, that must have been a hell of an experience coaching with the senior men's national team.
And the junior team, because I was with Ken for 1 year and then I was with the junior team for 2 years. That was incredible.
Because Ken Shields is technically and tactically one of the best coaches in ever. Canadian yeah. basketball history, right?
Yeah,
and in the world.
And we had the opportunity of bringing in NBA guys to be guest coaches. And guys like Ron Adams, who coaches with the Golden State Warriors right now, he's the first assistant for Steve Kerr. I mean, he taught me everything I knew about defense.
I mean, you brought that wealth of knowledge back to Bishops.
Yeah, and so that was enormous. That was enormous. Yeah.
And you know what? I think it's important to hear that because a lot of times coaches will say to players over the summer, you got to get better. But you know what? Mm-hmm. Coaches got to get better, right? Like you got to be constantly up on what's happening in the game. You got to pay your dues. You got to keep getting better, correct?
Yeah, you have to learn every single day.
Now, tell me about, so let's just move forward. Like, tell me about like the second big recruiting class you had that ultimately led to a national championship, but we won't get into that. But
okay,
talk about Ryan Thorne.
Okay, in 1994, we brought in nine players. And I guess in 93, we brought in, no, yeah, 94, we brought in nine players. And not all nine lasted, but a good core of them did. And out of that group was Stuart Clark, was Greg Southward, was Rob Burns, and it was supposed to be Ryan Thorne. Ryan committed to us, and then I never heard from him in August, and then I didn't hear from him for a year, and we kind of had to chase around, and we did. We stuck with it, and we made sure that we nicknamed Ryan the Fugitive, and we were going to find the Fugitive, and you know what? That was a great find.
So those guys show up, and I mean, would you say that part of like being successful at a program like Bishops would be trying to build around a core group of guys that are going to be there for 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, it's not instant potatoes because, like, you know, the team that won the national championship that first year, our league record was 5-7. So our overall record was less than 500. So you think about that. A team that was less than 500 4 years later wins a national championship.
Well, that's like adversity can help build that, right?
Well, yeah, but adversity, but you take it into the right direction. And those guys were believers and they bought in and they had that. And you know what? They epitomized what happens when you bring people into a special community like Bishop's, when you could really build that chemistry and spend time with your players, get to know them, they get to know you, and you really build something that is special.
Now tell me about this. Like, let's get away from basketball. Now you've been at Bishop's for like 12 years. You've won a championship. You've recruited a great second class that's going to be on their way to another couple of championships. What about your life in the community and your personal life? How was the community, you know, a cornerstone of your life at that time?
My first few years I had a lot of the ladies in Lenoxville looking to get me married. And, so it was kind of nice that they were looking out for me. And I met my wife Heather at a party at Tom and Linda Allen's house. And, what's peculiar to Bishop's is that, what was peculiar to Bishop's was that the football coaches used to host after game parties where the faculty and parents and even some of the players and everybody would come in so I met my wife at one of those parties.
And we're then, at 60 Clough Street?
Not at 60 Clough, at 40 Summer Street. That was great. I inherited two stepsons, and they became part of.
The decision you made in '84 to come to Bishop's was ultimately a great decision in your life.
It sure was.
Look, that's it for today. We're going to be back in a couple more weeks with Eddie to go through the championship years, a national championship, and then the end of his coaching career at Bishop's. Eddie, thank you so much for coming in today, and I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, and same to you.
Okay, welcome back to the wrap-up section of Time Out with Coach Craig Norman, sitting here with Diana Andreville. You know, we really got nothing on tap this week in terms of competition. We're practicing, but we're preparing for our Christmas tournament. The girls are going to go home on the 17th of December. Like I said before, they're going to return on December 26th. You know, I don't think the administration's too happy with that, but we got to practice and we got to get ready. So the girls will be on the floor December 26th. At 2:00 in the afternoon, and that's part of the sacrifice of being an elite athlete at this level. That you know what, we don't enjoy all the perks of a regular student. A student athlete sacrifices a bit more, and you know what, the girls buy into that and they understand that. Now, the three teams that are going to be in the tournament besides us are the McGill Martlets, all right, who are defending national champs, are ranked second in the country, Ryerson Rams, who are 8-2 in their conference, and they're ranked 10th in the country, and the UNB Reds, who are ranked, I think they're in second place in the AUS. Now, on December 29th, there's going to be a game between McGill and Ryerson at 2 p.m., followed by UNB versus Bishop's at 4 p.m. All right, that's December 29th at Mitchell Gymnasium. On December 30th, at 1:00, McGill will play UNB, and at 3:00, Ryerson will play Bishop's University. And at the conclusion of the second game on December 30th, there'll be an award ceremony where there'll be a championship trophy given out. There'll be All-Stars and an MVP. So I think it's going to be great for the community. It'll be a great event for the family looking for something to do over the holidays. Now, I'm just going to briefly go through the three teams in the tournament besides us. I talked about us in the intro segment. So Ryerson Rams, during the 2017-18 season thus far, they're 8-2. That's their conference record. All right, their overall record is 13-3. So, you know, 2 years ago they were in the national championship final. So, you know, they're ranked 10th in the country right now. They're coached by Carly Clark, who's a Bishop's alum. All right, she played at Bishop's for 4 or 5 years under Rod Gilpin. And she's now, this year, she was named the assistant coach for our senior women's national team. So she's an outstanding young coach. And, you know, she's going to be bringing her team back to Bishops, and they've got a terrific team, and that's going to be a big challenge for us on December 30th. McGill is here, and they're coached by Ryan Thorne, and he's a Bishops alum. So we've got a neat connection with Ryan Thorne and Cardi Clark, who are both played at Bishops and studied at Bishops and are prominent alumni. Now, McGill is ranked second in the country right now. They're 3-1 in conference record, all right, and their overall record against U Sports is 10-2, and they're an 11-3 overall. They played a couple of NCAA teams early in the year. They're ranked number 2. They won the national championship last year, and you know we're not going to play them because we play them 4 times during the season. But we're thrilled to have them in our tournament. UNB Varsity Reds. They're coached by Jeff Speedy, who also coaches within the national team program. They were in the national championship 2 years ago, and they lost in the quarterfinals to McGill. Right now, they're 5-3 in their conference. And they're 7-7 overall. We'll open up the tournament against them. And that's going to be an interesting game because last year we went down to their tournament. They were kind enough to invite us down to their tournament. And we managed to beat them quite handily on the opening night of their tournament. So I would imagine they're going to come down here for some sweet revenge. So, you know, that's going to be a terrific, terrific tournament. All right. It's all teams that are, you know, hot, pretty well coached and are doing quite well this year in U Sports. So I think it's a real treat for the Lenoxville community, and we're hoping to fill that gym on December 29th and 30th. Now, sitting here with me is Coach Anderville, and Diane is, you know, each week she gives us a coaching tip of the week. Diane, do you have a coaching tip this week for our listeners out there?
Yes, I do. So this week I wanted to talk about defense. From experience at the level that I coach at, most of the kids only thought how to play zone defense, which helps in the games to win, but I think it's important to teach the kids how to play man-to-man, show them how to win individual battles on the court, how to stay low and defend the player, how to maintain the player, making sure they're in a low athletic stance, and making sure that they're always aware of the ball and their man at the same time, being in between their man and the basket so they could always protect the rim. And I think this will help them once they move on to the next level, because once, let's say they get to CJEP, they don't know how to defend, then it becomes a problem where they have to catch up. So it's better to set the foundation and teach them how to play man-to-man from the start.
I agree totally with that philosophy, and I think it's very sound. You know, when we're recruiting kids to play at this level, which is elite level and probably the best conference in the country, it's really hard to play somebody if they can't guard somebody on the other team. And at this level, and at the, you know, at the pro level, teams look to attack matchups. So it's absolutely essential that you learn how to play defense individually and be able to guard people. It's a great tip, Diane. Thank you very much. Well thought out, well delivered. Great message for coaches out there. Now, the song of the week this week is a song called Rise by Eddie Vedder. It's a neat song because I think our program is on the rise, and it's been on the rise for a couple of years now. All right, and we work very hard at it, and you know, we do make mistakes, but a message I've tried to give the girls, and Eddie Vedder talks about it in the song, is you want to turn your mistakes into gold, all right? And you can't be afraid to make mistakes, and if you keep working, you will rise. And I believe our program is rising to the level of the competition we're playing against, and we're looking for a big second half to our season, and we're looking for a great tournament at Christmas time. Now, I think we're not going to be on the air for 2 weeks. It's a Christmas break, so I want to wish everybody out there a happy holiday season. All right, be grateful for what you receive under the Christmas tree this year. Make sure you give to others. It's not about receiving. It's about giving. Understand that there's a lot of people out there. This is a tough time of year for them. So make sure that you're out there in the community and be safe. Be happy, be merry, have a great Christmas season and a happy new year. All the best from Coach Craig Norman and Coach Anderville. I'm gonna rise up, throw down my head.